Colorado media continues its slanted coverage of oil and gas companies. Plus, local developers are starting to get increasingly vocal about the harm being done by green building regulations to Colorado's economy. We discuss all this and more on this week's edition of the Power Gab Podcast. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, and you're listening to the audio version of the show. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and sharing. And to check out the video version, head on over to powergab.org for new episodes every week. Enjoy! All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Power Gab, your go-to show for all things energy and environmental policy in the state of Colorado. I'm Jake Fogelman, joined as always by my co-host Amy Cook, joining us remote this week. And to kick things off, before we jump into the bulk of our story, we want to talk about a pretty important article that dovetails very nicely with a lot of the complaints we've been making. We did want to touch on something that you brought to my attention this week, Amy. We'll call it, I guess, your pet peeve in energy journalism.
It does, and it makes me crazy. And this is when news organizations call energy companies, diversified energy companies, right? So they may do a whole bunch of things. You can call them energy development might be more of a, might be more accurate. But this was Colorado Public Radio, and just to let everyone, it was Chris Wright came and visited Colorado last week. And so Colorado Public Radio did a story about him, and they said former CEO of Colorado or Denver-based fracking company, now known as Liberty Energy. And of course, it was all about Chris Wright. And I just, I went on LinkedIn and just, I'm kind of, basically I said, I'm sick of this. Let's clear up a couple of things. Liberty Energy has always been Liberty. It used to be Liberty Oil Field Services, mm-hmm. and now it is Liberty Energy, but it's always been Liberty. So saying the now called Liberty Energy, I mean, maybe I'm nitpicking, but it just sounded like they were, it was trying to be dismissive in it a little bit. But the thing that really got me and always does, they call them, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, fracking companies. To call a company that does as many things, has a whole suite of services like Liberty Energy, to call them a fracking company is intentionally dismissive, and it is meant to be insulting and portray the company in a negative light. In Colorado Public Radio, I get it, you're left of center, and I get it, you are climate alarmists. Okay, get it. All of that. But you know what? You don't, you should at least be factually accurate and be technically accurate. And so I actually said in there, I said, to call Liberty Energy a fracking company is the equivalent of calling a hospital an X-ray shop. They do far more than that. And the same thing with Liberty Energy, it does far more. And Colorado Public Radio should know better. And you know what? We've let it slide so many times. I just said, I'm sick of it. And now every time I see it, I'm going to call them out. I'll pop it up on LinkedIn. People will probably get sick of me. But anyway, it did get some traction on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I'd say it's one of those things that, you know, fracking to us isn't a dirty word, but you know exactly what they meant when they tried to. It's one of those things that sounds like we're splitting hairs, but this is very intentional in this line of work. The word choice does matter. Believe us, we've come across enough energy journalism over the years to know we can read between the lines of what's implied here. And it's also just before we move on to the main story, is it even technically accurate? Because isn't Liberty a midstream company? Don't they? they bring things from the wellhead to where it needs to go. But that might be getting too in the weeds, but.
Well, let's put it, they have a whole suite of services, mm-hmm. of which one of them is support services for hydraulic fracturing.
Right.
So, but it is one small sliver of what they do. They do a bunch of things, yeah. But it's like when you call, instead of natural gas, they call it fracked gas. Like right. it is done to be, to portray it in a negative light and to some extent be dismissive of them as an energy company that actually contributes to the security and prosperity of our state and of our nation. I just, it's a pet peeve. Sorry, everybody. I get it. I may have gone overboard on this, but it's a pet peeve of mine. And I decided this time I was sick of it and I was going to call it out.
No, it's worth mentioning for sure. But speaking of journalism, one that is actually not as shoddy. We had a story in Colorado Politics and in the Gazette, the series of newspapers they run. Headline is, quote unquote, "I can't do business in Denver now, colon, developers blame energy regulations as commercial projects decline in Colorado." And this was a cover story that I think is the perfect distillation of something you say quite often on this show, Amy, that energy is the economy. And this article here really gets into what that means in practice.
Yeah, 100%. And we've talked about this, especially those of us who've been in this space, about how important energy is. And also, if you want to break it down even further, I mean, we know about oil and the importance of gasoline, obviously, but we're at a point almost where electricity is what is driving everything, the load, data centers, AI, future growth, and this push for electrification. And so what we saw in this article, and by the way, well written, well worth reading. We'll drop the link in the show notes. Everybody should read this if you haven't seen it or if you haven't read it yet. Is you literally have the state of Colorado. We can now quantify it, right? There have been reports that show that Colorado is losing opportunities, commercial development opportunities to other states because of regulations, things like, what was it, 30% by 2030, and then 80%, and this is an 80% reduction in their carbon footprint by 2040. Now, again, so now we're back to this myopic view that Colorado has, that we are run by climate fundamentalists like Will Tour and Tom Plant at the PUC, Will Tour at the Colorado Energy Office, the entire, well, I'd say most of the Colorado Democrat delegation in the state legislature, and of course, our governor. Our governor is the biggest champion of this decarbonization. But what we are seeing is it is absolutely suffocating economic development in not just Denver, but in Colorado. And what we're seeing is Colorado is losing economic opportunities in the commercial development space, and we're losing it to states all around us. People are going to Utah, Nebraska, and actually some going as far, and we have developers, homegrown developers in Colorado that are looking at other states. They've been here for 70 plus years. They are going to other states because, as we've said, energy is the economic paradigm these days, and Colorado is strangling, well, suffocating is probably better, suffocating economic development because we're choking off energy when we need it the most.
Yeah. And it could not, so this one, you want to talk about pet peeves, like you said, with the journalism, this one, this particular group of regulations, what we'll call maybe building electrification or forced electrification, is a real pet peeve of mine, because what do we hear so often about in the state of Colorado in terms of cost of living? Cost of housing, the cost of real estate. That's been just such a dominating theme in our politics, and to intentionally do things to inflict costs on that very sector. You want to talk about a sector under siege in the state. So this set of regulations, it's called Regulation 28. That's the state's version of this building decarbonization. It comes from the Air Quality Control Commission. Denver has its own version, Energize Denver. It's coming as the city of Denver currently has a 35% commercial vacancy rate, which is thought to be the highest it's ever been. And, you know, it hasn't recovered since COVID. I think it's like a threefold increase since COVID. So you still have a beleaguered real estate sector, and now you're layering on these new mandates that say you have to meet, like you said, a 30% decarbonization-based benchmark by 2030, when they also set the baseline for that as 2021, which, by the way, was the middle of the pandemic when vacancy was really, really low, or really high, rather. So you're never going to be able to meet a benchmark when no one was in offices or anything like that. So they literally pass far-fetched, impossible-to-meet mandates that are squeezing these folks at a time when you can't even afford to, you know, have commercial leases in the city as is. And by the way, this applies to multifamily housing as well, these large buildings. So I just, this drives me so insane that this is happening right now. And all we hear about is the cost of living. And to your point about, you know, losing economic opportunity, a portion of the story deals with some numbers from the Commercial Real Estate Trade Group that says the state of Colorado has seen a 55% decrease in economic activity in its commercial sector that it attributes to these regulations. And that's going from $14.8 billion in impact to just $6.6 billion in impact. So we're talking billions of dollars are at stake here because of these insane mandates.
And the other, to add insult to injury, is you have denial, right? You have denial coming out of the, I think this is out of the city or the mayor's office. This is Elizabeth Babcock, executive director of Denver's Office of Climate Action, Sustainability, and Resiliency. Not sure she's talking about economic resilience. but what she says is correlation is not causation.
Right.
Okay. Why don't you just ask them? They are literally telling you why they're not coming, and you can't. And then you're going to go ahead and say, "Well, correlation's not causation." Well, they're telling you it is. And what she says, we've never really recovered since COVID. No, and you're not going to.
Right.
Because those older buildings. So we have property in an older building in the old Denver Dry. And that building's never going to meet these standards, never. So you know what you're going to have to do? The only way to meet that standard is tear it down. Just right. Tear it down, because there's no other way to meet those. It's too expensive. What they were saying is that developers don't install, you know, natural gas because it's cheaper, or because it's cheaper than sort of electric infrastructure. They say it's cheap. They install it because it's cheaper for the tenants over the term of the lease, because it's easier to heat with natural gas, heat water. It's cheaper. Heat water, heat the building. It's easier to do it with natural gas. So this idea that that they don't do electric because it's more expensive to install it. It's because electric heat, this total electrification, is wildly expensive. You literally have people telling you that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because when I, like you said, you saw sort of a head in the sand response from the city and both from state policymakers as well. It's like, actually, they stand to save a whole lot of money if they would just abide by our mandates. So I went and actually looked at the numbers, because I've done this from time to time. Typically, you get numbers from EIA or what have you on what the cost of natural gas is versus the cost of electricity. And the most recent numbers they have available, I have them here, for January 2025. So delivered commercial natural gas was about 4 times cheaper if you equalize the units between, you know, dollars per 1,000 cubic feet versus cents per kilowatt hour. It's about 4 times cheaper, the gas that's delivered to commercial sector versus the electricity that's delivered to the commercial sector. So not only do you have this huge upfront, you know, capital expense to retrofit, the ongoing costs after you've done the retrofit is going to be 4 times more expensive. So where are we supposed to be seeing these savings? Where are these savings supposed to be materializing? I can't find them.
And I got to tell you, here's the other thing. It isn't Cole's fault about the cost of electric rates.
Right.
You can look squarely as we have increased the amount of intermittent wind and solar on Colorado's grid, costs have gone up. So don't tell me it's coal, because it's not. Coal is not the problem here. It is the overbuilding, the necessary overbuilding you need to do for wind and solar. It's the accounting for the lack of reliability, the backup generation, everything you have to have with wind and solar in order to accommodate it on a grid. So yeah, that's the reason why electrification is going to continue to increase costs in Colorado. And to your point, Jake, all the talk has been about the affordability in this state. And they are doing, when I say they, the collective they, I mean state and local leaders. You can look at the mayor's office, you can look at the governor's mansion and his administration, and elected officials in the legislature. They are doing everything to drive up cost in the state.
Absolutely. Talking about this story, this is one of the first times I've seen a lot of these developers, I think, actually go on record and forcefully denounce these policies as driving them out of the state or out of the city, or what have you. And I think there's some signs that that's starting to make a little bit of a difference politically, but here's what doesn't give me hope. So Energize Denver, which is Denver's version of these regulations, they've floated a couple of proposals to kind of loosen their mandates a bit. The state legislature has floated a bill this session, House Bill 1269, which it claims is its solution to work with these building developers. But let me tell you something about what's in 1269. Their so-called fix for these problems is going to be to charge these same building owners asking for cost relief from these regulations an annual fee to fund support from the state to help them meet these goals. So they're going to take money from one pocket to give it right back to them to meet the goals that didn't need to be met in the first place. And also, they are proposing in this so-called relief bill, increasing the fines that can be levied against these building owners to $50,000, up to $50,000 per day that they're not in compliance with the carbon goals. You have these folks saying, "Give us some relief. It's going to cost us way too much money." The state legislature thinks it's extending an olive branch. Oh, and it turns out it's going to be another regulatory sledgehammer against them. So I'm not holding my breath that policymakers are actually going to wake up to this stuff, but I do think it's noteworthy that all of the biggest developers are saying something's got to give.
You bring up a great point, Jake, because the fact that they're willing to go on record means they have sort of reached the end of their, or they've reached a breaking point. They've reached a point where we can't do this anymore. We just can't. And we've got to say it out loud publicly. And the fact that the Colorado legislature, in its collective wisdom, comes up with something that's going to fine them $50,000 a day. Yeah, because that, don't worry, we're going to save you. And then we're going to beat you economically into submission. Actually, this brings up an interesting point, because one of the things that's in here is it mentions a lawsuit that they brought, and that lawsuit has been dismissed, right? I mean, that's. But I actually am wondering if there were three executive orders signed on Wednesday that could come into play in Colorado's sort of in this space. And I say, just sort of economically, as we've talked about, energy is the economic paradigm. So these three executive orders that President Trump signed, one was, can't discriminate against coal. Okay, well, that one's probably not the big one. There are two more that come into play. One is that the reliability of the grid is a national issue. So if your state is doing something that is threatening grid reliability, there is potential for what I would see as some kind of petition for a ruling or an order from the Department of Energy, or the Department of Justice, even, to stop or thwart, throttle some of these regulations, some of these laws that are coming, that are we're going to be forced to implement in the next, say, 5, 10, 15 years. But I think the one that could have the most impact on Colorado, where, for instance, if developers wanted to do this, would be there was also an executive order essentially saying, we're going to go after states that overreach on greenhouse gas emissions. Well, it may as well have said, Colorado, we're coming after you because you guys have some of the worst, and actually, worst, they would call it, what is it? What is the word that Polis likes to use? Bold. I would call them aggressive, draconian, a whole bunch of things. Bold is not it. But where you could see, I mean, I could envision a group of developers or others coming up or asking the Department of Energy for an order, or asking the Department of Justice for an order that stops this. Maybe it's an injunction of some kind, go to a court, get an injunction, or get the DOE and the DOJ involved in Colorado in energy policy that could slow this train down long enough to force them to the table, force the, you know, climate fundamentalists to the table to negotiate on this. I mean, I could see something like that. And I think that could be the impact of those three executive orders that we saw on Tuesday or Wednesday. No, today. Yeah, on Wednesday.
Yeah. That is interesting. And something I think it will be worth watching, especially because, like you said, this lawsuit, the building owners lawsuit, got dismissed. But we've seen lawsuits elsewhere dealing with sort of the federal interplay between natural gas and these local electrification mandates. For example, in Berkeley, they're forced electrification got tossed because they said federal law preempted their ability to do that. And then here in Colorado for the last few years, there's been rumors about potential ballot initiatives to prevent the ability of the state to ban home and building fuel sources. So there's always that live proposition. So there's definitely a lot of balls in the air to watch different ways for, I think, folks to continue fighting back, because it doesn't look like the state and the city are prepared to offer much in the way of relief. But of course, we'll stay on top of all that as it happens. But as we're coming up on time here, Amy, do you have any takeaways for our listeners on this topic?
Yeah. Well, one is, you know, my pet peeve now. So that it's out in the open. And if you have, if you find it anywhere, if you find fracking company anywhere, feel free to send it to me. Jake will always let you know what the email is here. And so feel free to send me examples. I'm happy to push them out. And also the bad actors in media, which there are a bunch of them. Second one is this, to me, this story is the classic example of regulation suffocating our economic development in Colorado. I mean, it is absolutely going to be detrimental to not just Denver, but to the entire state. And my third one is always get a generator. And I, at this point, get multiples.
Yeah, it's getting to be more important advice every single day, it seems like. But that does it for us on another episode of PowerGab. If you folks like what you saw here, you can head over to powergab.org to check out our entire back catalog. We produce new episodes every single week. We're also available wherever you get your audio shows, whether that's Spotify or Apple. And like Amy mentioned, if you'd like to reach out to us to send us pet peeve examples or to suggest future show topics or guests you'd like to see us interview, you can send those our way at info@powergab.org. We always love hearing from you guys. But until next week, we'll see you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Power Gap, I hope you'll share it with a friend.
Or even an enemy.
You can listen to more episodes on all of your favorite streaming services. We release a new episode each week.
If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a show topic, email info@powergab.org. And to watch the video version, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.